And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. It is a great day when the United States is actually succeeding in providing more humanitarian and relief supplies to the suffering civilian population in Gaza, particularly in North Gaza, with an invasion of the southern part of Gaza to finish the job against Hamas terror units in the very real possibility for the days ahead. With all of this going on American college campuses, a really, really shocking incident about the glorification not only of terrorism, not only of the Hamas cause, but the glorification of suicide. Unbelievable. We will get to that, and this in one of America's most prestigious universities. We will get to that on the Michael Medved Show. We will also be talking about the tremendous excitement in the Russian election. People are voting all across the world's largest country by land area. The Atlantic magazine has a fascinating point that they're making. What's happening in Russia, they write, is not an election. Words matter. We should call it an election-style event. And this is one of those reasons why, God bless America, we're so lucky to live here. At least most people, and I think most people who look at this in a sane and accurate manner, understand that our elections actually mean something. No, it is not a given that one candidate or another is going to win anywhere. Certainly not for the presidential balloting that will be taking place 8 months from now between the incumbent President Joseph Biden and the challenger, Donald Trump, looking for a return trip. The idea that those elections don't matter because the whole thing is rigged in advance is an obnoxious idea. It's not true now, and it wasn't true in 2020. That is the point of a new book called Disproven. The author, Ken Block, who had been hired by President Trump to investigate election fraud in 2020 and to prove that the election was not valid. Well, actually, he's proved exactly the opposite. We will be speaking with him coming up on the Michael Medved Show. And concerning the other non-electoral aspect of political combat that has gripped the country in the last several months, there is a big update from Georgia. A special prosecutor, Nathan Wade, who had been chosen by Fani Willis, the elected prosecutor, district attorney in Fulton County, Georgia, that special prosecutor with whom she had been romantically involved is not necessarily ending the romance, but he will step down from the sprawling Georgia election interference case against former President Donald Trump and his co-defendants. Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee had just ruled that the Georgia election interference case against former President Donald Trump and his co-defendants could continue, but only if Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis or Prosecutor Nathan Wade removed themselves, because basically what he was saying was that it was an improper relationship and a tremendous lapse in judgment. The ruling is a middle ground, according to most analysts, following the revelation that Willis and Wade were engaged in a romantic relationship for more than a year. There are also charges that Willis may have benefited financially from that arrangement because of lavish vacations they took together. Willis and Wade admitted to the relationship only after it was first alleged in January court filings, not for Donald Trump, but for one of his co-defendants whose name is Michael Roman. Meanwhile, speaking of defendants, The BBC is reporting that several people have been detained for vandalism at polling stations on the first day of voting in presidential elections. Incidents involved green dye being poured into ballot boxes, the boxes being set afire, and fireworks being set off inside polling stations, state media reported. Well, that's just a little bit of premature celebration for the tremendous victory that lies ahead for Vladimir. He is certain, says the BBC. This is obviously based upon early entrance polls, I'm sure, from the Russian balloting. He is heavily favored to win 6 more years in office after the vote, and then maybe 60 more years. One of the things that's fascinating is you will remember that with both Lenin and Stalin, they didn't have a normal death and internment. They were both stuffed, basically. And it used to be that you could see both of these great dictators, both Vladimir Ilyich Lenin and Joseph Stalin, in glass display cases at the Kremlin. Their bodies were out there, which is about as ghoulish and insane as you can imagine. One of the questions, Stalin's body is no longer there. I mean, because basically the Russian leadership conceded beginning in the 1950s that Stalin was a grotesque and monstrous mass murdering dictator. And but Lenin is still there, and he's been there since 1923. He died. Now that's getting pretty. I mean, the due date on his corpse, I think, has been reached. You know, let's check that due date. Let's see, 1923 to 2024. So will Vladimir, when his service to the people of Russia, when that service concludes, will he get the same treatment, maybe take the place of Lenin's stuffed carcass? And by the way, anyone who thinks that Vladimir Putin is not enough of an egomaniac to crave something like that, I think doesn't know their guy. The ideal of the election, it says that the voting is going to be completed on Sunday, and the winner, hold your breath, will be inaugurated in a lavish ceremony in May at the Grand Kremlin Palace, former residence of czars and empresses and other ruthless dictators. Meanwhile, I had mentioned before this shocking dispute in at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. And in early March, students at Northwestern University painted the Rock, which is a boulder on which campus organizations advertise their group's events. They had painted the Rock in honor of Aaron Bushnell, the United States Air Force technician who set himself on fire and killed himself outside the Israeli embassy. With the words were painted on the Rock were "Rest in Resistance," accompanied by his name. The glorification of a man whom Hamas praised as immortal, yeah, just like those corpses of Lenin and Stalin, offers a glimpse at the simmering anti-Israel hatred and anti-Semitism that has taken root on campus at Northwestern in the wake of the October 7th massacre of Israelis. That's reported by Jewish Students to National Review. So what do you do about the glorification of political suicide? We will get to that and to more. Speaking to PETA, they're against saying cheese. Why? We'll get to it.
The Michael Medved Show.
Hey And here on the Michael Medved Show, we try to keep an open mind in addressing all of the many, many, many problems that Americans are facing, particularly problems in the education of our children. There's a notable trend in the United States that has existed for many years. I'm not sure of its origins, but trying to get people, especially school kids, to pose for photographs, what do you say to them? You normally say, say cheese. And I think part of the idea is that when you say the word cheese, the corners of your mouth naturally sort of turn up and you sort of smile. Okay, that is now being opposed by PETA. They have requested this week that school photography companies cease using the phrase, say cheese. So what's wrong with cheese? We have on the line the assistant manager of PETA, the people for the enlightened treatment of animals. And the assistant manager's name is Amanda Brody, for the ethical treatment of animals, actually. Amanda, what's the problem with saying cheese?
Hi, well, thank you so much for having me. So PETA's ad, which aims to tell people about the dairy industry, which forcibly impregnates cows, steals their babies, kills the males for veal, and recycles the females to become living, breathing milking machines. So nobody should be smiling about animal abuse or be the cause of it by buying cheese or anything else that comes from an animal. So PETA's new ad just calls on everyone to say no to the dairy industry and choose vegan cheeses and foods that no one had to die for.
Okay, but you have a clever substitute that you're urging people to use instead of saying cheese. What should they say?
They can use many different phrases, including say peas or bees. But really what we want people to take from this ad is what the dairy industry doesn't want people to know is that virtually no cow is permitted to fulfill her mother instincts. The male calves are stolen at birth and they're either fattened for beef or they're killed at a very young age for the cruel veal industry. And the female calves are going to endure the same exact fate as their mother with a constant cycle of forced insemination and having each of their calves stolen from them within days or hours of birth. So that's what we want people to take from this ad and to choose fish, dairy, and buy vegan foods instead.
Okay. Do you believe that it's worthwhile to tell children the means, the reason that they're not saying cheese anymore?
I mean, children naturally love animals and everyone hates to see animals being abused. And young people are the ones who are really caring about animals and the environment and learning that the dairy industry is a key part of animal agriculture, which is the single greatest man-made cause of the climate catastrophe. So we all should go vegan, but young people are really the ones who will face the worst of the environmental damage if we don't. And they're the ones who we're seeing are turning away from dairy.
Did I just hear a statement that I think is a lot of experts might challenge, which is that animal raising and farming basically involving animals and eating animals, that that is the greatest element of the human contribution to climate change, more than, for instance, the use of fossil fuels?
It's definitely one of the greatest contributors, and something that each of us can do every day is choose vegan foods instead and can help combat, you know, the worst effects of climate change. And we're seeing that young people are learning this and are especially turning away from dairy when they learn about the harmful impacts that it has on the environment and also the extreme cruelty to animals that involves. You know, like all mammals, cows only produce milk to feed their babies. And in order to produce enough milk for the current demand of human consumption for milk, mother cows are forcibly impregnated many times during their short, miserable lives. And they always have their babies taken away from them.
You also have called for the replacement of idioms like kill two birds with one stone. The what should we say instead of kill two birds with one stone?
So a replacement we have for that is feed two birds with one scone. We have a huge list on PETA.org of our animal-friendly idioms.
Right,
and that's
and the animal-friendly
matter.
I like the idea that you have kill two birds with one stone should be replaced with feed two birds with one scone, and because you should feed birds instead of killing them. Then you have bring home the bacon is obviously no more acceptable. So you think that that should be substituted with bring home the bagels. That also gets over addresses the non-kosher aspect of bacon. Really, in the ideal world of PETA, there would be no pets, no farms, no zoos, no non-vegan kind of food, but there'd also be no carousels. Now, this one really surprised me. It was in the press release I received. What exactly should happen with carousels, and what is the problem with this very traditional element of fun for kids?
Yeah, so I just did want to go back briefly, is that PETA does recommend that if people can open their homes to dogs or cats, that we always encourage them to adopt from an animal shelter, because there are millions of dogs and cats in need of homes. But with the carousels, is that we are encouraging that particular manufacturer to produce non-animal figurines, because it really perpetuates the idea that it's okay to use animals for our exploitation and entertainment. You know, PETA receives hundreds, thousands of complaints every year for people who have seen abuse going on, where they go on camel rides or elephant rides. And these carousels are perpetuating the idea that it's okay to ride these animals. And so we're just suggesting that they instead create them to be inanimate objects that can still be fun for everyone, and not teach kids or anybody else that it's okay to use these animals for our own entertainment.
Well, you suggest using rainbows instead of wooden animals. What about the report on Fox that you're pushing to get rid of the White House Easter egg roll, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks, and instead of chicken eggs of any form, you should be... What do you want people to be rolling in the White House?
We suggest that they use potatoes instead of chicken's eggs, because as you can imagine,
roll very well.
I mean, I've rolled a potato before. I don't know about you, but in that way, when you roll potatoes, you know that no one was suffering or had to die in order to take their eggs from them, which is what happens to chickens in the egg industries. They live horrific, short, miserable lives until their egg production slows and they're eventually slaughtered.
That was Amanda Brody, who is assistant manager for PETA. They are having their own say cheese controversy. The controversy, meanwhile, about the ethical nature of the election last time goes on. President Trump says it was stolen. Was it? We'll talk to the computer expert hired by President Trump to validate the election. Coming up. And on the Michael Medved Show, there are many, many important issues that are before the country in this election. In the view of Donald J. Trump, one of the most important issues involves the last election, and also the attempt that he believes is there and already launched to steal this election. There is a new book. And it's a book from somebody with a very important perspective on these issues of valid elections. I mentioned that Ken Block had been hired by Donald Trump to validate the results of the election. He hadn't really, and you'll find that by reading the book, disproven. He hadn't really hired anyone to validate the election results. He had hired people to invalidate those election results. The subtitle of Ken Block's book is My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the data that shows why he lost and how we can improve our elections. Ken Block is an expert in voter data. He's a technology entrepreneur, a two-time candidate for the Moderate Party for governor of Rhode Island, and an advocate for good government, and the founder of Simpatico Software Systems in 2001. Ken, thanks very much. Congratulations on the book. For those who haven't read it yet, and I hope everyone will, how many weeks did you work for Donald Trump in trying to invalidate the election results?
So it was about 35 days. First of all, good afternoon, and thanks for having me on. It was about 35 days from when the contract was signed for us to do the work to when the last state of interest, meaning the swing states, certified the election results. And, you know, what a lot of people don't understand about contesting an election result is that's your window. From election night until the votes are certified, that's when you have to make your successful case to a court of law to contest the election. Once the votes are certified, there is no legal mechanism to undo an election at that point. So all those lawsuits that happened after roughly December 5th were just political show. They could never have been successful.
Okay. In terms of what you found and what you found in other elections, how would you compare the presidential election of 2020, particularly in some of those contested states like Georgia and Arizona and Michigan and Pennsylvania? How were the results in those states more questionable than the results that we usually get and that you've seen in prior elections?
So the 2020 election, except for the increased use of mail ballots, which is pretty understandable given COVID's impact on everything in that time period, there was, and obviously the extraordinary interest in voter turnout in 2020 relative to, let's say, 2016, there isn't a whole lot else that jumps out in terms of notable and disconcerting differences between the two elections. The most obvious comparison between the two is when you look at President Trump's performance in 2016 in terms of his share of the vote compared to the Democrat's share of the vote. In every state, and also when you look at it in every county, across the board, across the country, in states and counties that are red, that were blue, that were purple, President Trump in the vast majority of those places did less well in 2020 than he did in 2016. And there's just no possible, credible kind of fraud that could explain that kind of underperformance virtually everywhere. And by underperformance, it's on average about 2.5%.
And what you're talking about is the percentage of the vote that Trump won, because he always makes the point. He actually got more votes numerically, right?
He did. There were many more people voted in 2020 than 2016. But when you look at Trump's share of the vote, he was almost uniformly down everywhere. And that cannot possibly be attributed to fraud, because if it was, you would be talking about voter fraud being committed in the reddest counties of the reddest states. And we know that that's just not credible or possible on that kind of scale, that kind of organized fraud. What it was, and don't just take my word for it, you can take Trump's pollster's word for it, because he had the same finding, and you can also take Secretary of State Raffensperger's word for it, and his finding in Georgia. What happened was Trump lost the support of the moderate Republicans, who he likes to deride as rhinos. And that accounts for millions of votes when you look at it across the country, and in Georgia, it amounted to about 100,000 votes. And the margin in Georgia in 2020, as we all know by heart at this point, was about 12,000 votes. It's really hard to win an election when you continually narrow your base of support, which is what President Trump did when he told the rhinos to take a hike. Usually the simplest answer is the right one when you're considering a big problem like what happened in the 2020 election. And in this case, it's really obvious.
This does seem really obvious, and obviously your arguments are echoing arguments I must admit I've made myself. But how did President Trump or his associates, how'd the campaign react when you gave them the disappointing news that the election was legit, it was on the level, there was no massive fraud?
Yeah, so just for your listeners' knowledge really quickly, I was asked to do two different things. I was asked to look for evidence of voter fraud in the form of deceased voters and also voters who cast two votes, one in one of the swing states and another in some other place. I was unable to find – I found small amounts of both of those kinds of fraud. When I say small, a dozen or fewer deceased votes in every swing state and 200 or so duplicate votes, one of which of those votes was cast in a swing state. And the smallest margin was at least 10,000 votes. So we weren't even close in terms of looking for the fraud. And the other thing that I did, which I know we'll get into – is assessing the claims of voter fraud that others made that the careful lawyers that I reported to at the Trump campaign wanted me to do their due diligence for them. They wanted me to determine if those claims held any water. And what I did over and over and over again in those 35 days was assess the claims of fraud that came in and landed on my desk, and every single one of them I could prove was false. The lawyer that I reported to, Alex Cannon, who I think is a hero in all of this because he wanted a straight-up assessment. He didn't custom order a result from me. He accepted all of my findings as true. He took those findings to Mark Meadows, who accepted those findings as true, that there was no voter fraud. Meadows' comment to all of that was that means there must be no there there, meaning that the claims of voter fraud were empty. And we learned through news articles a few months ago that Mark Meadows took that message into the Oval Office.
Okay, we're going to take this message back to our listeners even more impactfully, I hope, because President Trump has already predicted that there will be a major effort to steal this election. What could be done to try to set people's minds at rest and to make a good election system even better and more foolproof? We'll talk about that and more with Ken Block, the author of Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter. The title of the book is Disproven. And Disproven what? We're talking about the election of 2020. And the author is Ken Block, and he talks about my unbiased search for voter fraud for the Trump campaign, the data that show why he lost, and how he can improve our how we can improve our elections. When you were working for the Trump campaign, you were very active for 35 days. I assume you got paid well, and I know that some of those details are in the book. But is it safe to say that if you had given the Trump campaign what they wanted, which was some evidence, any evidence of massive election fraud, if you had delivered that to them, you could have made a lot more money, couldn't you?
Well, I'll say that Sidney Powell, the author of the failed Kraken lawsuits, which were hustled out of court with the harshest language from the judges that received those lawsuits. She made $16 million doing that. I made nothing close to that in the work that I did, and I was doing legitimate work. So had I found it, I'm sure I'd be talking to you from a Caribbean island right now. But that none of this was about profit. As I went into this doing the work, after talking to my wife and daughter about it, I mostly wanted to do it because it represented a unique opportunity to conduct a real-time national audit of a presidential election with unlimited funds and access to every shred of data that the RNC had. And I jumped at that because it may not ever happen again. And I'm really thankful to everybody that allowed me to do it, and especially because an environment was created for me that did not have any political pressure. The folks in the White House didn't know my identity while I was doing the work.
Wow. One of the things that's fascinating about your book, the book is called Disproven. It is posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com, is you have suggestions for how we can clear up some of the doubts that exist that have been promulgated by President Trump and his administration. You can clear up those doubts with some changes. And one of the changes you suggest is no excuse mail-in ballots. Allow anyone to vote by mail. They do not need a reason like poor health or out-of-state travel to qualify. And then you also go ahead.
That's actually not one of my recommendations.
No, because what it suggests is some of the press material that I've received. You are in favor of automatic voter registration,
right? And I when I talk about the voter registration, one of the big challenges with real election integrity, not election integrity posing as election denialism, is that the states all do things differently when it comes to voter registration. Some states do a great job at it, have very clean data. Other states do an absolutely terrible job at it. They're bad at removing deceased voters. The quality of the data is terrible. As an example, New Jersey has 25,000 voters who are older than 118 years old, which is impossible. No one has ever been that old, right? So, and none of that's voter fraud. It's just sloppy data systems. And my proposal is we should do away with state-based voter registrations. We should have a federal single voter registration system. And in fact, we shouldn't even have to formally have anybody take an action to register, because according to the Constitution, you're eligible to vote if you're born here or if you're a naturalized citizen. So upon those two events, you should just be given a voter registration, and then when you're the proper age, you can exercise your right to vote. That would simplify and make dramatically better the whole mess that's out there right now with voter registration being done differently and in many ways poorly by many different states.
Okay, a couple of questions that are very pertinent. Trump is running for president again. Do you know, had he received the results of your investigation before January 6th? Did he know that Ken Block had been sent out there and was looking and looking and looking, and he didn't find anything for you, Mr. President? Did anyone tell him that, do you think?
Yes, news articles reported that after Alex Cannon told Mark Meadows that nothing was found, that Mark Meadows then took that news into the Oval Office.
Okay, then the second thing is...
And that happened prior to January 6th.
I'm not asking you to be a mind reader, just you infer. Does President Trump still really believe that he won the 2020 election by a landslide?
I don't know. I have never spoken to him. Had I spoken to him, I probably would be having a very different experience in terms of the number of book sales that I have. But it's and I don't want to conjecture on what he thinks or what he doesn't think. My role in all of this is strictly fact-based. Here's what happened. Here's why it happened. Based on the news that the information was delivered to him that the campaign itself didn't find anything. At the same time, he was hearing from a great many people that there was fraud everywhere. I'm talking about Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell and all of those folks.
Jen Ellis, right.
It's hard to know. It's murky. I did prove as false claims of fraud that came from Powell, that came from John Eastman. They came to my desk, and I was able to shut down a couple of lawsuits that they wanted to file based on false data.
Okay. This is something you, like every other American, watched some of the riot in January 6th and some of the injuries to the police officers and the sacking of the Capitol building. You actually knew the background to everything that was going on. How did you feel watching that?
So even without knowing the background of the work that I had done, that kind of violence attached to our electoral processes and the imminent transition of power in our country was a heartbreaking thing for me to watch, regardless of who did it and why. We as a country are far better than what went on that day, and we need to get ourselves back to where we were before that day.
Ken Block, he is the author of Disproven. And let me suggest many people will find the book fascinating and persuasive and appreciate it. And then you will have some people on your gift list, maybe, who don't so much, might not appreciate it so much, but they need it. Because we still have, according to polls, a majority of self-identified Republicans. And by the way, I should make clear that Ken Block is a self-identified and registered Republican who ran in the Republican primary for governor of Rhode Island after he had run one time with the so-called Moderate Party, which he co-founded. In any event, right. There are people who desperately need this book, and I think America does as well. It's posted at our website. The full title, my subtitle, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, The Data That Shows Why He Lost and How We Can Improve Our Elections. Ken Block, last word.
Yeah, in 2014, I lost my statewide primary for governor by 3,000 votes. And I conceded my race, even though I would have rather punched the guy in the nose I ran against. That's where we need to bring our elections back to. Public service needs to be brought back to public service and just being upright and forthright. And I have confidence that we're going to find our way back there.
Actually, so do I. And let us hope that we head our way back here in 2024. Again, the book is posted up on our website with information about it at michaelmedved.com. Coming up, there is so much going on that we're even losing track of one of the most important threats to the United States, which is the shrinking budget for our military. Former Secretary of Defense Mark Esper was a real hero in this regard. He'll be talking about